Welcome to the Securities Industry Essentials Examination Podcast, audio lessons for the SIE exam. And this is lesson number 2. And in this lesson, we're going to be talking about common stocks. This is really the first lesson that's actually dealing with the content of the material you're going to need to master in order to pass the Securities Industry's Essentials Examination. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about common stock. Now, first of all, if you look at a company's balance sheet, there's going to be an asset, a liability, and an equity section. And the common stock side of the equation is in the equity section. Common stock is the equity of a company. If you're a common stockholder, you own a portion of the company. Common stock is issued by the corporation, and it's also issued by investment companies. When a company goes and does the charter for itself, it will register with the state, and in the state registration, in the articles of incorporation, it will state that the company is authorized to issue X number of shares. And then it'll usually state what the par value of those shares are. And it can be at par or a no par stock. Typically, a company will have either no par stock, which means there is no intrinsic value to the stock, or a very low par value. And par value is simply the stated value of the company's stock on the company's balance sheet. For instance, let's say a company issues stock at $10 a share, yet the par value on the stock is $1. On the balance sheet, you will see issued stock at par at $1 and paid in excess of par value of $9. This is very common. The par value is set low primarily because of the different state regulations involving the taxation of corporations. Some states charge a tax based on the par value of the stock, and it really just depends on the state the company is operating in, what they can and cannot do. What state the company is chartered in depends what they can and can't do. So when you have a question, say, if you have a multiple choice question, which asks, what would be one reason why you have a low par value on a stock? The answer to that would be because the taxation of the various states might tax the par value at a certain rate. And by lowering the par value, it reduces the tax to the corporation. Now, in the articles of incorporation, you will see authorized shares. When you look at a balance sheet, you will see issued shares. The issued shares is the number of authorized shares that have been sold. So a company may authorize 1,000 shares, but only issue 100 shares. And that means that other 900 shares are sitting there and they could be issued later to raise additional capital. So you'll have issued shares and authorized shares. Additionally, you will also have sometimes treasury shares. And treasury shares have been shares that have been authorized and issued and then bought back by the company. And they can use these shares for pension plan funding or stock option plan obligations, or they may choose to retire these shares at some point in time. When a company calculates its earnings per share, treasury stock shares are not taken into consideration when calculating earnings per share. Also, treasury stock does not have voting rights, and it does not receive dividends. Let's talk about the record keeping of stockholders. The corporation must keep records, very detailed records, of the number of shares outstanding and who owns those shares. Also, it must include the names and addresses of the owners of those shares, and that must be made available at the annual meeting for inspection. The reason the company has to have these registration documents is it's so that it knows where to send mail, such as the 10-K, and we'll get into that later on, and the 10-Qs, and the annual reports, and also the dividends that it may distribute. It has to have a detailed record. The person that keeps the records for the corporation is called the registrar. and that's spelled REGISTRAR. Now, let's say you sell your stock to another person. When you sell that stock, the person that handles the transfer of your stock from your name to the other person's name is called the transfer agent. So the registrar watches the transfer agent to make sure he makes the transfer in the correct way. The transfer agent will cancel the old shares, which were in your name, and issue new shares in the name of the new purchaser. This is updated daily, and the new information of the address and the person of record is passed back to the registrar. The list of owners of the stock is called the Record Book of Stockholders. Transfer agents can make mistakes from time to time. Now, over the last half century, they've gone from being actual physical securities to book entry certificates. And in this case, instead of physically issuing shares and then canceling them when they're bought and sold and reissuing new shares, the book entry certificate simply makes an entry in the books of the transfer agent and by the clearing corporation that conducted the trade and that settles the trade. When you're asked, the registrar is always acting as the watchdog over the transfer agent. Okay, let's talk about the rights of the shareholder. The first and foremost right you need to understand as being a common stock shareholder is that your liability is limited to the value of your stock. In other words, you can't lose more money than you invested. You can lose all of that money, but your liability is limited to your investment. The second thing you need to understand is that common stockholders have the right to vote at the company's annual meeting, and they vote for the board of directors, who in turn will appoint the officers of the corporation. Two other things you will always see on the proxy statement. The first one is the reappointment of the auditor. You have a right to vote on the auditor that audits the books of the corporation. Now, I've never heard of an auditor being voted out of a corporation through the proxy process. And one other thing, to have a say on pay of the executive management of the company. And this is something that's caused a little bit of consternation in corporations, because there has been a very big tendency to increase pay packages for executives. And it's come to light now, and now we're starting to see stockholders push back against what are considered fairly exorbitant pay packages. And in fact, in the last few years, there's been actual votes against the pay packages. Now, these are non-binding votes, but management must pay attention to what the wishes of the stockholders are. In my firm, just a little side note, I am responsible for voting the proxies of the holdings that our company has. We're a registered investment management firm, and I vote the proxies. And I will typically spend some time going through these and compare the growth in the revenues and the earnings of the corporation against the growth in the executive salaries. And quite often there's a big disconnect. You'll see that the company's growth has been marginal or flat or non-existent, yet I continue to see executive pay packages increase. And when I see this, I typically vote against the pay package, and quite often I may choose to vote against the entire board of directors for letting this behavior continue. Just a side note on that. Quite often on proxy statements, and this is the ballot basically that you will use to vote your choices, there will be other issues that may relate to the corporate business, such as the authorization to authorize more shares, or the changing of certain stockholder rights, such as preemptive rights, and we'll get into those a little later. But the amount of shares that you have is determined usually by the number of shares you own. If a company's issued 100 shares and you own 50 shares, you have 50% of the voting rights. Now, there's some other concepts we'll get into later on, which talked about preemptive rights and other rights of stockholders that affect sometimes how you vote. Stockholder will often vote on whether to issue additional convertible bonds or preferred stocks. These will be all things that are voted on in stockholder meetings and also special meetings that are called by the board of directors. Some items that require a stockholder vote under the New York Stock Exchange rules include the declaration of a stock split, the issue of stock options to officers on a preferential basis, in other words, at a price lower than you and I get to buy in the open market, the issuance of convertible bonds, and also the declaration of a reverse stock split. A stock split is when you would multiply the number of shares by a certain factor. A typical stock split would be a 2-to-1 stock split, where once you had one share, after a stock split of a 2-to-1 stock split, you would have two shares. A reverse stock split is exactly the opposite. A 50% reverse stock split would say if you once had two shares, when they were done with the reverse stock split of 50%, you would now have one share. Some items don't require a stockholder vote, according to the New York Stock Exchange rules. And these include the declaration of a dividend, the declaration of a stock dividend. And a stock dividend is, instead of issuing you additional cash as a dividend, they issue you additional shares as a dividend. And this is different than a stock split, primarily because the number of shares they're issuing doesn't amount to what is considered a split. And also, it's not required that you have a stockholder vote to repurchase shares. These are decisions that are made by the board of directors. Now, the logic that the New York Stock Exchange uses in the requirement that a stockholder vote be used to, let's say, declare a reverse stock split or issue convertible bonds or preferred stock or issue stock options or declare a stock split is because they think that these actions could be, and quite often are, dilutive to the stockholders' interests. For instance, if the company issues convertible bonds or, let's say, preferred stock, it may be dilutive to your interests as a stockholder in the company. And the logic is that you should have a right in deciding whether that is done or not. Under the New York Stock Exchange rules, dividend decisions are made solely by the board of directors. And a stock dividend, as long as it is less than 25% of the outstanding shares, can be made by a decision of the board of directors. And the logic there is that if you have one share of stock and you get 25% more, that it's not dilutive to you. You own the same proportion of the company after a stock dividend as before. And they don't require a vote by the stockholders for the purchase of treasury stock, because if the company buys its treasury stock, your proportional interest goes up. And there's mathematical problems we'll work through later on that talk about this. Stockholders have the right to vote at the annual meeting. There's two types of voting rights. The most common right is called a statutory voting, and the other type is called cumulative voting. Statutory voting is simply one vote for each director. So for example, if you own 100 shares of stock and there are 10 directors that are to be voted on, you would have a total of 1,000 votes, one vote for each director times 100 shares. So 1,000 votes. Cumulative voting is quite different. In statutory voting, you only have the right to vote yes or no for each director. In cumulative voting, you can take that 1,000 shares and vote it for one director, or you might take 500 shares and vote for two different directors. Nonetheless, you cumulatively gather your votes and cast your votes for the directors that you want to win the office. You may see on proxy statements from time to time the attempt by the current directors of the company to take away cumulative voting rights. This serves to entrench the existing board of directors. Cumulative voting is considered an advantage to the smaller stockholder because it gives them a disproportionate ability to elect a director to the board of directors. We may get into this in a little more detail later on with some specific questions. Voting is done at the stockholder meeting. There used to be a time when stockholder meetings were held in obscure and difficult to get to locations because the only people that got to vote at the annual meeting were those that showed up. Now it is required that proxies are issued, and you will get these proxy statements in the mail, and you will have a right to vote by mail. This eliminates the necessity to travel to the annual meeting. On the proxy statement, quite often there will be a box to check to state that you plan on attending the annual meeting. And usually you can change your vote between the time you send a proxy in and when you attend the annual meeting. In a company's capital structure, quite often there will be multiple classes of stock. Some classes will have voting rights. Some will have supermajority rights or super voting rights. The capital structure is determined by the board of directors and usually voted on by the stockholders. If the articles of incorporation do not include multiple classes, in order to create a new class of stock, stockholders will be required to vote in favor of creating new classes of stock. Quite often you will see Class A and Class B stock. Class A may be tightly held by an individual group and it controls all of the voting rights. Class B may have equity in the company and have the rights to distributions and dividends, but not have any voting rights. The New York Stock Exchange does not allow different classes of common stock. All stock issued on the New York Stock Exchange is simple common stock with no supermajority voting rights or super voting rights to different classes. The New York Stock Exchange does not allow different classes of stock. The NASDAQ and American Stock Exchange may allow different classes of stock. As I said earlier, at the annual meeting, you have the right to inspect the books and records of the common shareholders of a corporation. This doesn't happen very often, and it's rare that you actually see this being offered to the stockholders. But this is a requirement of the Securities Act of 1934 that these books are open to inspection. As the stockholder of a publicly traded corporation, you have the right to transfer ownership, and you can transfer ownership without restriction. They're considered negotiable securities. There are securities that are considered non-negotiable, and these cannot be traded on the New York Stock Exchange. Some examples of non-negotiable securities could include mutual fund shares, savings bonds, because these securities are redeemed by the issuer at a calculated value. Mutual funds redeem their shares at net asset value. Savings bonds are redeemed at par value or a discount to par value, depending on how long the bonds have been held. Another right that seems to be going out of favor is a right called the preemptive right. And a preemptive right is simply the right of a shareholder to maintain his proportionate ownership in a corporation. For example, let's say a company had issued an outstanding shares of 1,000 shares. It had authorized shares of, let's say, 2,000 shares. Now it wants to issue that other 1,000 shares that are on the corporate books with preemptive rights. You have the right, if you are one of the stockholders that bought the 1,000 shares, or if you are one of the stockholders that owns one of the 1,000 shares, you have the right, let's say, for example, you own one share of stock. You have the right to buy that one share of stock before it is offered to somebody else at the issue price so that you maintain your proportionate ownership in the company. These are called preemptive rights. When a company that has preemptive rights chooses to issue new shares, they will quite often issue what are called rights, and this is called a rights offering. And as a stockholder, you will receive a right. And you can use that right to buy stock, and you can sell that right should you choose to and should there be a market for that right. As a stockholder, you have a right to corporate distributions. either in the form of stock dividends or cash dividends. Most corporations pay common dividends quarterly, but some companies do it on a semi-annual or annual basis. The most common is a quarterly payment of dividends. And the final right that a stockholder has, a common stockholder has, is to the right to the corporate assets upon dissolution of the company. If a company goes bankrupt, after the creditors are paid, if there's any money left over, it is distributed proportionally to the common stockholders. Now, there's a whole hierarchy of who gets what and when, and we'll go into that later on, because if there's preferred stock issued, the preferred stockholders will get paid before the common stockholders. The common stockholders stand last in line to get anything in a corporate dissolution or a corporate bankruptcy. When a company makes a dividend declaration, it declares the dividend, and there's some key dates that you will hear when you're talking about dividends. There's a declaration date, and that's the date that the board of directors determines that there will be a cash dividend paid. Then there's a record date, and the record date states that any stockholder that legally owns the stock as of the record date will be entitled to the dividend. And then there's a pay date, and that's the date the dividend is actually paid. Let's just take an example. Let's say a company declared a dividend on January 1st for those of record on February 1st, payable on May 1st. So if you bought the stock in January and held it through the 2nd of February, you would be entitled to that dividend. If you bought the stock February 2nd, you would not be entitled to that dividend. The pay date may come after you've sold the stock and you would still receive that dividend. So we have the three dates. We have the declaration date, the record date, and the payable date. Now, when you're buying stock, you typically buy a stock on one day, but it actually settles 3 days later. So this is something new. We need to talk about settlement. When I entered the industry, when you bought a stock, you had the trade date plus 5 business days before you had to actually either deliver the stock or deliver the money to pay for the stock. So that was called T plus 5. Later on in my career, they changed it to be trade date plus 3 days. So in other words, when you buy a stock, you now had trade date plus 3 days to get your money in or to get the stock in. In reality, I usually wouldn't buy stock or securities for clients without the money being in the account unless I knew them very well, unless I really trusted them. But in 2017, specifically on September 5th, 2017, it changed again to where it's now trade date plus 2 days. So I'll give you an example. Now, 2 days is 2 business days. It's always been business days. So if a holiday fell on one of those days, then it was the day after the holiday started the business day. So if you bought a stock on Friday and Monday was a holiday, in the current situation of trade date plus 2, it would settle on not Tuesday, but Wednesday. So the stock must be in the account, had to be in the account on Tuesday, T plus 2, where before you had 3 days. Now, the SEC has already said that they plan on eventually getting to trade date plus 1 day. So look for that as a possible change in the future. But for now, and as of September 5th, 2017, it's trade date plus 2, or T plus 2 is how it's referred to. So let's say you bought a stock on Friday. The stock would not actually settle until 2 business days after you bought the stock. Let's say you bought the stock on Friday. Under the current new change, the stock would not actually settle until 2 business days after you bought that stock. So assuming there's no holiday, that would settle on Tuesday. Let's say you bought the stock on Thursday. Now, the stock, assuming there's not a holiday, would now settle on Friday, not Saturday or Sunday, but Monday. But if you have a holiday in there, then you ignore the holiday and count another day. So if Monday was a holiday and you bought the stock on Thursday, it wouldn't settle until Tuesday. Now, you're probably going to get several questions on settlement. So make sure you understand the new rules, which is trade date plus 2 days. Now, what does this affect? Well, I just printed out the information from Charles Schwab, and I'll read it to you because they wanted to make sure their clients knew about it. It says, what securities are impacted? Any security that currently, and this is before it occurred, settled on trade plus 3. So these include common stocks, corporate bonds, municipal bonds, unit investment trusts, exchange-traded funds, America Depository Receipts, or ADRs, and exercises and assignments of option contracts and mutual funds. Now, perhaps not all mutual funds, but this says mutual funds. So make sure you understand that the new regular way settlement, and that'll also be called regular way settlement, is trade date plus 2 business days. So you don't actually own the stock legally until the trade date plus the 2 business days. So on the third day, you would legally own the stock. So this can be a bit confusing, but just remember, when you buy the stock, you don't actually legally own the stock for 2 days after the date that you bought the stock. So if you bought the stock today, and today is Monday, you would not legally own the stock until Wednesday. That's the second date after the trade date, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. When an individual buys the stock in a regular way purchase and legally owns the stock, it's called he will come the dividend. He comes the dividend. So he owns the stock come dividend. When you buy the stock and legally own the stock after the dividend date, then you own the stock ex dividend. If you watch a company's stock, you will often see the stock drop by the amount of the dividend the day after the ex dividend date. And that's the date that the stock dividend is legally owned by the stockholder. And the day after that, the person that buys that stock will not receive the dividend. So let's look at this from a different point of view. If you're going to be buying a stock on Thursday, that's the purchase date. 2 business days later, you own the stock. You don't legally own the stock until Monday. Monday is the date you legally own the stock. Now, let's talk about the ex-dividend date to be able to purchase the stock and buy the dividend. So the ex-dividend date is considered the date that the stock goes ex-dividend. The stock goes ex-dividend 1 day prior to the record date. That's because 2 days prior to the record date, you could buy the stock and still own the stock and get the stock dividend. So the stock will drop by the amount of the dividend 1 day before its record date. In other words, 1 business day. Remember, we're always talking about business days. And this applies for ex dates for stock dividends, stock splits, and right offerings as well. So remember, you don't legally own the stock until 2 days after the trade date. It's called normal settlement, regular way settlement. These are terms you might need to understand. Sometimes it's called normal settlement, sometimes it's called regular way settlement. Nonetheless, it's now T plus 2, trade date plus 2 days. Now we talked about right distributions, and these are called preemptive rights. This is the first chance to buy newly issued stock by the corporation. Quite often, companies will issue these rights to give the existing stockholders the right to buy the stock at a lower price than it's willing to sell it to the public. And so automatically these rights have value. The difference between what the company may issue the stock at and the price at which you have the right to purchase the stock. And the company's logic in selling stock to its existing stockholders is it bypasses the underwriter fee, so it saves money. And if it saves money, that means you, as a stockholder, save money. A rights offering is usually handled by a rights agent, and rights expire. They usually are fairly short-term in nature, usually 30 to 60 days. A right is tied to a stock, so one share of stock will receive its proportionate share of rights. For instance, if a company has issued an outstanding shares of 1,000 shares, and let's say they just want to issue another 500 shares, that means every existing stockholder would have the right to purchase a half a share of stock. Well, you can't really purchase a half a share of stock, but you may get a right to purchase a half a share of stock, and that right will have some value, and you can sell that right in the open market. Now, there's a term called cum rights, and this is what is considered the value of a right. And there's a formula that determines the cum rights value. And that formula is the right, or the cum, is worth the market price minus a subscription price that you have a right to buy the stock at, divided by the number of shares that you own, plus one. And we will work through these formulas in some of our video sessions. When a stock trades X rights, this is the same as X dividends. That means purchasers of that stock on the X date will no longer receive those rights. And again, this is going to be 2 days before the right distribution, 2 business days before the right distribution. And then if you're going to buy the stock X rights, then you need to calculate the value of your stock X rights. And there's a formula for that as well. When a stock trades X rights, the purchaser after the X rights will no longer get the distribution. So the market price of the right will be reduced by the X rights. And the formula for that is the value of the X rights is the adjusted market price minus the subscription price divided by the number of shares you own. And we will go over that formula in the video as well. If fractional rights are issued, the company allows the right holder to round up. So you can buy the next number of share stock higher than the rights would normally entitle you to. That's going to close out this session. Now let's just go over the terms that you need to review. And if you don't understand these terms, you need to go back over and re-listen to this or go to your books and read the books and visualize it in writing. We recommend that you do all forms of learning. People have different abilities to learn. Some people learn audibly. Some people learn visually. Some people learn by reading. Some people learn by watching. There's various ways. We recommend that you do as many as possible to reinforce what you're trying to learn. So let's go over the terms that we've talked about again. And I'm just going to list the terms, and you need to define it in your mind. What is stock? What is authorized stock? What is issued stock? What is par value? What is no par stock? What are outstanding shares? What are treasury shares? How are dividends calculated? Are treasury shares included or not? Stock registration. Who is the registrar? What does he do? Who's the transfer agent? What does he do? What is a book entry certificate? What are rights? What are the rights of a stockholder or a shareholder? Stockholder and shareholder are two terms that mean the same thing. What requires a vote by the stockholders? What does not require a vote by the stockholders? What are the board of directors allowed to do without a vote of the stockholders? What are preemptive rights? What is statutory voting? How many votes per share do you get? What are proxies? What are different types of classes of stock? What classes are allowed on the New York Stock Exchange, and what classes are allowed on the NASDAQ or American exchanges? At a stockholder meeting, what do you have a right to inspect? What rights do you have as far as transfer of ownership? What is a negotiable security and what is a non-negotiable security? What's a preemptive right? What is the declaration date, the record date, and the payable date? What is regular way settlement? That's going to finish up this lesson. Thanks for listening.